All right. It is now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. So let's please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Karen.
All of a sudden, it got hot.
Oh, my goodness.
Hi, my name's Karen, and I'm an alcoholic. First, I need to thank God for another day of life.
Yes.
And for the strength and courage that he gives me every day to continue on this journey. I'd like to welcome any newcomers, whether you announced yourselves or not, and encourage you to keep coming back. Give yourselves a break. For me, I think it started when I was 12, 13, is when I had my first drink. But I had a lot of trauma before that. You know, my mom left and my dad put us in foster homes, and so I went through three different foster homes and some weird shit going on there. And my dad came and got us, and my dad was military. So it was everything in our house was yes or no, sir. There was no talking back. There was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You did what he said. That's it. That's all. If you didn't, you flew across the room. And I was a straight-A student. My dad didn't know how to show love. Okay, and growing up, I interpreted that as he didn't love me. So through school, through academic achievement, I strived to earn his love. The thing is, it was never good enough. No matter what I did, it was never good enough. I got straight A's, and this is good, but there was always that but. You know, I already felt all messed up just from all the other stuff previous to him getting us. So at 13, junior high school, I think the first thing I did was smoke a cigarette. The second thing was alcohol. And I liked that, so I started drinking alcohol because then I felt a part of something. And I just progressed with that. Drugs are a part of my story, and no disrespect to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I was drinking and smoking weed, drinking and eating Reds, drinking and taking uppers, drinking and doing cocaine. You know, I ended up going to juvenile hall many times, running away from home. They finally took me away from my dad and put me in a group home, and I ran away from that. I hitchhiked and up north and lived up there. I was 16 when that happened, and after I turned 17, my dad knew where I was. He called me and said, "You can come home now. They're not looking for you anymore. They closed your case." So I hitchhiked back down. I grew up in San Diego. So from Mountain View, I hitchhiked back down to San Diego. And me and this other girlfriend of mine. And we ended up being picked up and kidnapped and raped for 3 days. That didn't stop me from doing the insane things that I did. You know, when I got out of that, and it's only by the grace of God, that's how I absolutely know that there is a power greater than me. Because I would not be standing here today if there wasn't. I should have been dead then. So I end up being arrested 3 times the first week I'm there. Drunk in public, disturbing the peace and curfew. And they told me that if I got arrested one more time, they were going to emancipate me and try me as an adult. Okay, juvenile hall didn't scare me. Jail scared me. So I did the smart thing. Let's get the hell out of San Diego. So, not thinking anything about, wow, I really need to change what I'm doing here, right? My answer is run. So I had two friends that were in the Navy, And one had just gotten discharged. The other one went AWOL. And they said, let's go. We were going to go to Washington to pick cherries for the summer. That's where we were going. So we take off. We stop in Fresno. Okay, I've never in my life heard of Fresno. Don't know where it is. Don't know what it is. Some little hick town in the middle of nowhere. And that's how it looked back in 1973. And so the guy that he has, one of the guys has family in Fresno, so we're going to try and get some more money so we can continue our little trip, right? And his girlfriend's there, and they throw this big old party, and we're all drinking, and the guy that had the van that was driving, Sam, he decided he wanted me to be his girlfriend, and I didn't want to. We were friends. And so we were drinking, and he got drunk, and he got jealous, and he threw all of my stuff out of the van, and he took off. So I was stuck in Fresno at 17 years old. Didn't know anybody. Stayed at Jack's parents' house out in the freaking boonies. I never seen so many cowboys, grapevines, and border brothers in my life. You know, I was seriously in culture shock, right? Because, you know, we lived in kind of a middle-class neighborhood in San Diego, so I didn't know nothing about lowriders or none of that stuff. And I was like, I get to Fresno, and they're doing this Main Street down Belmont thing, and I'm like all partying out on the street, and cops are everywhere, and I am like, what is wrong with these people? In San Diego, there's places you can go out in the country and have, like, weekend-long parties.
Right.
That's what we used to do. So there's no cops, right? I'm like, I don't get this, but okay. You know, so I end up, of course, you know, no matter where we go, we find our people. I don't care what town you put me in. If I'm in my active addiction, guarantee you, I'll find them. Quick. We recognize each other. And that's what I ended up doing. And I'm thinking, you know, now I'm going to be a good girl, and right? Because I got away from that place, you know, and those people, you know, only to end up with the same type of people. I married a man because I needed a freaking place to live. That's the honest to God truth. We were partying, who cares, you know? Now I got somebody to take care of me. Yeah, it's insane. That's when, you know, I had slammed some down when I was down there, and then I got up here, and we were just smoking weed and drinking and drinking and drinking. And I ended up finding connections here, and I started doing that deal, and there it started. I had my first felony in 1976, and I went to jail. I think I got 140 days or some stuff. And then I seem like it's like, well, wow, that wasn't so bad. Jail's not that big a deal. My disease is really good at telling me some stupid stuff that I buy hook, line, and sinker. You know, so I'm, you know, I get out. I end up with a probation violation. They offered me Synanon at that time. They offered me Synanon for the probation violation. Well, Synanon back then was a year-long program, and they shaved your head. I'm like, why you gotta shave my head? Why do they do that? And they're like, well, they want to see if you have feelings behind your hair. I'm like, check it out. I got feelings behind my hair. Okay? So they said, okay, well, if you don't do a year here, you're going to do a year flat in county. I said, give me the year flat. Bring it on. So I did a year flat in the county. Then I decided I was going to do something different, right? And back then, they let you be on methadone. So, you know, I'm making Pruno in the county jail because I know how to do that. So we can get drunk there too, you know. I'm tripping. And so I get out, and I get on methadone, and I'm on it for 10 years. 10 years I'm on this stuff. I'm still drinking, mind you. And they don't teach about recovery or 12 steps or Alcoholics Anonymous, or they don't teach about any of that, you know. So I end up, and I did well. I got a job. I had the same job for 9 years. I worked for the Department of Rehabilitation for the state of California. And I ended up back out. And I'm like, I got kicked off methadone for cocaine dirties, cocaine and alcohol. They don't let you do that stuff. So they kicked me off. So then I'm drinking, I'm slamming, and I'm insane. And I'm doing this, and I work for the Department of Rehabilitation. I am in the state building. I'm doing all this insane stuff. I'm out on the balcony smoking rock. I'm in the bathroom slamming. I get off work. I'm drinking. Finally, I quit that job because I didn't want to get fired from it, because I thought I might want to go back there one day. So let's cut our losses here. But I couldn't stop. If I stop drinking, then I'm smoking weed or I'm doing other things. If I stop doing other things, then I'm drinking. You know, and the result of that is I ended up with 3 prison terms. I've had 3 numbers. And, okay, prison scared me. Prison scared me. I like to act like I'm tough, but shit, it scared me. So, you know, the first time there, I remember that like it was yesterday, because they dress you in these little freaking moo-moo things. And high top titties and moo-moos. I'm the fashion statement. And, you know, they take you into what is called the receiving unit, and I'm thinking that, I don't know, I think the whole prison's like this, right? And they open that door, and it's a little tiny 2-man cell. 2 people can't move at the same time in there. I start backing up. I'm going, oh, no, 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 I can't do this. And he shoves me and slams the door. Right, so the first probably 6 months that I was there, I was looking for a way to escape. I'm a runner. If you give me half a chance, I'm gone. That's what I do, I run. You know? And so when I paroled that first time, I swore to be damned. I ain't going back there. Screw that, I'm not doing that. 2 weeks tops. I'm drinking, and I'm doing all that insanity again. Not once, when I think about drinking for the first time, do I play the tape through. Do I remember the humiliation? Do I remember being locked up? Do I remember? Because it's humiliating. I mean, you go to jail or prison, that shit's humiliating. You got to get butt naked, stripped down, cotton, squat and cough, mirror between your legs, the whole 9 yards with 20 other women right there. It's humiliating. Do I remember any of that stuff that made me feel like this? Not once. Not once. So I repeat that pattern over and over. Go back on violations, get off parole, pick up a new case. I kept one number for 9 years. I had 4 years running time. Because I run. In 1997, I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous through... this is the funny part. I was not trying to get in the program. Okay, I was in jail. I got busted. I picked up a new case, and I had a parole hold. I didn't want to go back to prison on the parole hold, so I fought the new case. I knew I wasn't going to beat it, but I fought it because I wanted to run out the parole violation in jail. So then they would have to lift the hold, and I could get out and do what I do. And the day the hold got lifted, I mean, I fired attorneys, became my own attorney. to prolong this process. They pull me into court and they tell me, check this out, Karen. We'll give you 4 years. We'll suspend the 4 years. We'll let you out today. Go get in a program. What do you think I heard? What do you think I heard? Freedom today, right? Where do I sign? So I get out of jail. The parole office is right down the street from the jail. It was on Tulare then. So I get out. I go straight to the parole office. I check in. I'm walking down the street. Everything in me wants to get loaded. And I'm thinking, well, you know, I can't use any drugs because that's against the law. But I'm not a 5B, so I can drink. And so there used to be a place called the ODAC Club in Fresno. It's a little hole-in-the-wall place, and it looked like a bar. And, you know, it was around noon, and I seen a lot of cars in the parking lot, and I thought, I'll go in there and check that out. And an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting was going on. I am like, wow, okay. So I practically lived in that place because now I'm thinking I'm already setting up another plan. I'm real good at plans. So I'm already setting up another plan. I have to go to in a program, and I just, so once I do that, if I can get that over with, probation, I'll kick it over to parole and I'll be good. And I went into the third floor, which is now West Care. And I did a little 30-day inpatient thing, and I sat in all these stupid groups they have, and I'm not paying attention. I don't believe these people, because I don't believe you. I don't believe any one of you that tell me that you're clean and sober, that you have used absolutely nothing. You're lying. You figured it out. You figured out a way to get over on the system. Come on. Tell me the game. Let me play it, too. And as I was doing, the first step, you know, is we admitted we're powerless over alcohol and our lives are unmanageable, right? And tell me something I don't know. I spent 33 years in this. I know. I'm not dumb. I got that. But the second step came to believe a power greater than yourself could restore you to sanity. My first thought on that is, what the hell are they talking about? I'm not insane. I don't yell at passing cars. I'm not arguing with the street poles, and I'm not chewing the bushes. Well, that's my definition of insane, right? I can't figure out what the hell they're talking about. But they tell me, so I have to do the writing. In order to get out of this program in 30 days, I got to do step 1, 2, and 3. So I'm doing the writing because I have to, right? And as I'm doing the writing, I get this thought. What if this is real? What if you could really stay sober? And I got that little bit of hope in my life. And you know what? It's life-changing. I never in a million years thought I would ever, ever, ever be able to stay sober. And you know what, though? Those steps are in order for a reason, and you get a sponsor for a reason, because I ended up back out. I had almost 3 years, and I ended up back out because I custom made my program. I did step 1, 2, and 3. Screw you, I'm not doing 4. Why the hell do I want to relive that? So obviously step 5's out, and since I haven't done step 4, I don't see character defects in 5 and 6. So my amends were only to my immediate family, and I'm sorry. It wasn't sorry for what or anything else. Everybody else, I figured, hey, you were in the game too. I got you, you got me, that's how it goes, you know. And I ended up back out. In that time, I got off probation and parole. I ended up with a new number and found myself sitting in prison again. And was like, how the hell did I get here? And I struggled. When I paroled, I ended up going back on another violation. But the last time I paroled was 2003. And I said, I'm going to do whatever these people tell me I need to do. And that's what I did. I went into a residential program for parolee women. I completed that program. I went to sober living. I went to meetings every day. I got involved in service. Service is so important. Early in sobriety, it really is very important, because you know what? It gets you out of you. It gets you out of this. That stinking thinking that goes on up here when we're all alone. See, you can't be thinking about you when you're in service helping somebody else. That saved my life. You know, it amazes me what this program has done for me. Through the steps, through the four step, through all of the steps, I have found a freedom that I never imagined was ever possible. My head does not haunt me anymore. My head does not keep doing this all the time. I have peace. I found that power greater than me. I do my prayer meditation every single day for what has been about 11 years now, I think. I do not miss a day. And I send a text message out to a few people, and I've been doing that for almost 11 years. Because that held me accountable. When I first started doing it, if I didn't send it, people would go, "Hey, what's up today?" And it held me accountable, because I'm wishy-washy. I'm wishy-washy. I don't want to be held accountable. I'll do it if I feel like it. If I don't, I won't. You know what? There are things that we need to do regardless of how we feel. And I learned that through that. And that's been my saving grace. You know, I sponsor women. I haven't spoken in a while. I've been real busy, and I haven't been to near as many meetings as I should be going to. I go to speaker meetings, but I really know you need to go to regular meetings, too. See, speaking meetings are safe. I don't have to talk. That's the truth of it. That's the truth of it. You know, I've gone through stuff I did through my step work I thought I had made peace with, and I found out I didn't. You know, it says more will be revealed. And as I'm on this journey, I'm finding that there's some stuff that I still need to deal with. See, back then, I don't think I could have handled it, so my God put that on hold for me. He said, "You know what, there will come a time when you'll be able to handle this stuff. I'm going to a therapist right now. You know, I needed to seek outside help for some of these things that I'm going through. You know, I thought I made peace with my mom leaving, and then my son found her. About a year and a half ago, it's been something like that. And I found out where she was buried, because she died in 1998. And so I was able to go up there and have a conversation. And I was able to meet a very close friend of hers and find out some things about my mom. You know, and I thought I had made peace with that. But the minute he found her, until I got up there, I was a mess. I was a freaking basket case. Because I hadn't made that peace. You know, and the longer I stay here, the road narrows. The more I'm held accountable, the more I see things. You know, it's kind of ironic. I'm a substance abuse counselor. And that was not my job, my dream job. I was not trying to be that. You know, I do H&I, and I do it for free, for fun and for free. That's always what I told people. People used to tell me, "You should be a counselor." I'm like, "You're crazy. I do H&I, and I do it for fun and for free." Because it's fun. I like carrying the message, you know. And I was, this is a God deal, getting me through the back door. You know, I was on unemployment. I had been on workman's comp for 2 years, and then I got on unemployment. And then in 2009, they said, "Hey, we're going to send out IOUs because we haven't figured out the budget yet." And I'm panicked, and I'm in an H&I business meeting, and the program director from the program that I went through said, "Hey, Karen, we need a night monitor. You should go apply." I thought, night monitor, I've never worked a graveyard job in my life. And I haven't worked for $10 an hour in forever, right? Ego here. And I thought, hey, it'll pay the bills. So I go over there, I end up getting the job, and then it's women only, and I really don't like women. That's the truth of it. At that time, I was like, you know, And God put me there for a reason. I know this. I have a huge heart for women. We need to stick together, sisters. I have a huge heart for women now, and it was because of that job. I liked it, so then I became the career developer there, and then I became the case manager. Well, the case manager, you actually go into the women's prisons to recruit for that program. Now, who would have thought? Who would have thought? First time we rolled up to VSPW, that's the last prison I parole from. I'm in the front. I don't know where I'm going, right? They're like, well, you've been here before. And I'm like, yeah, but they bring me through the back on the bus. I've never seen the front of this place. I never saw the front of it. You know? We go through all these little weird changes, right? And I hit the main yard, and I just stop, and I'm just looking at it. And my first thought is, oh, my goodness, I don't remember it being this ugly. My whole perception had changed. Because you know what? Going to prison, going to jail, doing this and that was no big deal because the disease told me it was no big deal. It's a freaking huge deal. I looked at it, and then I'm like, really, God, here? Here? You want me here? Since then, I've worked in High Desert State Prison as a substance abuse counselor in the SAP unit. I've worked in Chowchilla in the SAP unit. Right now, I work with parolees at an outpatient program, day reporting center with WestCare. And it's been the biggest blessing of my life, something that I would never, ever have chosen. Because I pray for God's will on a daily basis. Your will, not mine, Lord. Your will, not mine. I know what my will gets me. I got 33 years to prove it. I know. But when I let him be in charge, when I'm working to live my life the way I believe he wants me to live it, that's when things go right. You know, I went back to school. I'm still in school. I've completed one whole semester at City College, which is why I ended up in therapy, because something triggered over there. I'm like, oh my God, I'm crying and I want to kill people. And I'm like, what's going on? You know? And so I had to seek outside help. I'm like, I don't know what's happening here. You know? And so I'm able to walk through this stuff. You know, I only had 9 units last semester, but hey, you know, I got a B in the math class, an A in the English class. So I'm like, who would have thought? You know, this program literally has saved my life. It has changed my life in so many ways. It's changed who I am. It's changed my perception. It's changed my attitudes. It's given me so many wonderful people in my life. Some of my friends from LOLs here. When one of us speak, we show up at different places for each other. Elena, she's my little pit bull. Because she holds me accountable. That's why I say that, because if I try to isolate, she'll be at my door. If I don't answer the phone, she'll be at my door. So I have to answer the phone. She does it. She helps me because sometimes I still get lost. I get lost. I have so much going on. My daughter lives with me. My 4 grandkids live with me. My daughter was in her addiction, so I was raising those kids for a while. Now she's doing right, but it's like, it's a lot. It's a lot for me. And sometimes I feel overwhelmed and I want to hide or I want to run, but I don't. I don't. Because I have a God in my life that gives me the strength one day at a time to get through this. You know, I start school on Monday. There's 14 units I'm taking now. I don't know. I'm like maybe overwhelmed. But I'm thinking, you know what? It's 4.5 months. I can do anything for 4.5 months. One day at a time, I can do anything for 4.5 months. You know? And it's... I just trust. I trust. I trust God. I trust the people that are in my support group. because I know that they're there for me to guide me when I start going a little this way, because we need that. We all need that. They hold me accountable. You know, when I told them I would come over here and speak tonight, I'm thinking, what the hell did I just do? You know, why did I say yes? All day I was thinking of ways, what excuse could I come up with to get out of this? It's the most retarded thing, because you know what? I always feel good after the meeting, no matter who's talking. I always feel good after the meeting, yet I will resist it. So when you feel like you don't want to go to a meeting, go. When you really, really, really feel like you don't want to go, go. That's the time you'll hear something that the light bulb will go on. It's happened every time to me. Somebody will say something and I'll go, oh, wow. You know, if we learn to keep an open mind. We have really crazy people that go to LOLT. I mean, really out there. You know, mental health patient out there. And we welcome everybody. You know, they consider us the low life of AA over there. I'm okay with that. I am way okay with that. You know, we get them from programs from everywhere, off the street, homeless. We've had all kinds of craziness happen there. And you know what? Everybody needs love. Why can't we reach out that hand and be that hand to say, welcome. Welcome. We love you. We care. Come on in. Get some coffee. Have a seat. And every once in a while, one of them way crazy people will say something so profound it'll drop your jaw. I kid you not. I kid you not. We can learn from anybody if you just keep that open mind. When you walk in the room, quit looking at how people look on the outside, because we do that. Quit judging. That person ain't gonna make it. She ain't gonna make it. She's over there side talking. Quit doing all that. And pay attention to what's being said. Because these rooms have so much wisdom in them. There's so much that you can learn. And through the steps, you learn to apply this stuff in your life. There's spiritual principles in those steps, like honesty, like faith, hope, integrity, justice, self-discipline, spirituality, service. There's so much. If you learn how to apply that stuff in your life, man, it will change your life. I'd like to say if I could do it, you can, but I don't know that. I don't know that. I don't know how willing you are. I don't know if you're setting limitations on yourselves. Well, I'll go to 3 meetings a week. I ain't going to 5. Well, I'm not going to that meeting over there. There's no cute chicks over there. No cute guys over there. I'll go to that one over there. That's how we think, right? Isn't that how we think? That's how we think. That's the real of it. You're in our recovery, that's the real of it. We get in these little programs, our hormones kick off, and we're looking at him. That relapse I told you about was behind a him. I married him. Got hit in the head with a baseball bat after that, just so you know. That's what he did for me. You know, I had more clean time than he did. I was more sober. I had almost 3 years. He had a year. You know, that we all have issues. We all need to work on ourselves. You're not going to find the quick escape through him or her, because it's an inside job. There's not a woman in the world that's going to fix any of you guys. And there's not a man in the world that's going to fix any of you women. It's an inside job. But I'll tell you what, when you fix the inside, you'll attract the woman of your dreams or the man of your dreams when you fix the inside. Because we attract what we are. Sick attracts sick. Healthy will attract healthy. Have those qualities that you want in a man, be those qualities. Have them in yourselves. Same for you men. You want a good woman? and be a good man, have those qualities. And the way to do that is clean out all the garbage that we put in here over the years that we were running amok and doing the stupid stuff that we do. I'm trying not to cuss. You know? There's nobody that can do it for you, though. You have to want it. You have to want it more than you want anything else in your entire life. And if you do that, you will see some of us as you trudge that happy road of destiny. Thank you.